Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made.
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscover Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
All right, Matt, we are here. We are on the last track of Dare to Be Stupid, and we have
it's
a polka, which has only happened one or two more times.
Yeah, I think so.
We are joined by a very special guest. He has worked in comics. He's worked in music. He has been on the Geekscape podcast. I am a big fan of one of his first albums, Spread Your Evil Wings and Fly. We have James Kochalka, who is here. I hope I got that close. James, how bad was that last name pronunciation?
No, that's fine. So, you know, I have a hard time deciding how to pronounce it myself. I think if I say, if I'm formally saying how to pronounce it, I'd say Kochalka. But I don't really say the ko. I say more like ka. So I say like Kochalka.
Kochalka. There we go.
I think it's just my accent.
So before we dive in, I mean, you've got a pretty good background of just doing comic books, music. You're really speaking to Matt and I's language as people who can't just focus on one type of art form, but just love to create in general. So if you can just kind of give a quick like minute or two breakdown of the hot points of your career, and then tell us about Al Yankovic in your life and when you discovered Al, we can get started there.
If you look at my music career, I think two or three songs probably jump right out. Monkey versus Robot and Hockey Monkey are probably my two biggest songs. It's funny, they're both about monkeys. And then Once Upon a Time, Rolling Stone named my song Britney Silver Can as one of the top 100 songs. I think that was like in 2007.
That's amazing.
Which to me seems like it was like yesterday, but really, I guess it's ancient history. To me, you know, 2007 sounds like, it feels like it was yesterday, but I guess to young people, it's like ancient history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's true. Yeah. I always forget how many years removed we actually are from 2007. That to me, that feels like that was just no time at all.
I think I saw someone post a thing the other day online that was like, as far as I'm concerned, the 90s were always about 10 years ago. Like if you ask me how long ago the 70s were, I'm like, it was 30 years ago.
Totally.
Like, it is never, like, that is just how my brain is wired.
I like to be walking down the street and I'll see like some young person. I'll be like, oh man, I think I went to college with them. And Amy will be like, that person's in college now.
Yes. I told my friend the other day that I'm like, I'm turning 37, but I feel like mentally I'm turning like 24. Like my brain, like something. But again, I think that does tie to like people who pursue the arts nonstop, is like something in our brain chemistry doesn't exactly go with our body. You know what I mean? Like, it's like as we get like older, and I part of it is like I'm living in the same house I was living in just after college, doing the same thing that I was doing after college, which is like trying to make it.
That's true.
So like I don't have this like ticking clock of like, oh, I've been at this job for X amount of years and I've like been moved up to this manager position. It's just like, no, I'm just trying to make it.
I mean, I used to work as a my first job was cleaning rooms at a Howard Johnson's. And then I got a job selling newspaper subscriptions over the phone. And then I got a job waiting tables at a Chinese restaurant. And then I became a full-time superstar making music and comics. And then that was like the last 25 years, you know. So.
Yeah. At a certain age, like when you're young, you have this sense of like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'll get to a certain age where I'll figure it all out because that's what people do. And then you just get older and older. You're like, oh, no, that's never going to happen.
Yeah,
like never, there's not a magic age where suddenly like, I know how the world works. I know what I'm doing. It's fine. Like that just will never actually occur.
I was friends with the guys in Fish in college and my band used to play with theirs around town and stuff. And then when we were graduating, one of my bandmates said to them, so what, you know, like, what are you guys doing after college? And they're like, we're going to do the band. And he's like, no, come on, really?
Yeah.
All right. So James, I have to ask. We've gone over a little bit of your career, but we're here to talk about Weird Al. What was your first introduction to Weird Al Yankovic?
Well, it was definitely from Dr. Demento. But my path to Dr. Demento is from a camp counselor when I was like in like sixth grade or something. My camp counselor was Tom T-Bone Stankus, who did the song Existential Blues, which was played a lot on Dr. Demento. I didn't know that yet. It was like, so then that was like when I was like, however old you are in sixth grade, you know, pretty young, like, I don't know, 12, I don't know, something like that.
And that then, sounds about right. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, then fast forward to being in high school and one of my friends was like, hey, I taped this show off the radio. It was Dr. Demento. It had Weird Al on it, and it had my camp counselor on it. I was like, wow, I remember that song.
That's amazing. Wow.
That's dope. That's fantastic.
I love that.
So I gave you a chance to pick some songs to talk about, and you wrote it back that you know you were a huge Weird Al fan, and you said a few of the songs off Dare to Be Stupid, we had already recorded most of them. But a few of the ones that you wanted to talk about was the title track, Dare to Be Stupid, Yoda, or George of the Jungle. I love that you wanted to do George of the Jungle.
George, yeah.
A thing that I infamously told Matt we can't do a single episode about, and Matt said, let's give it a shot, and we got like 35 minutes about George of the Jungle.
I did so much research because Matt was like, we can't talk about George of the Jungle for more than like 2 minutes. I was like, oh, get ready. Here we go. I'm doing a deep dive in American cartoon history.
Yeah. But you, right there in the middle of your list, you threw in Hooked on Polkas, which is the track that we're about to talk about today. What about this particular song did you connect to? Is this your favorite of the polkas? We can start there.
Well, I wasn't growing up a huge fan of pop music, right? I really didn't listen to it.
Yeah.
I really like the first Weird Al album where he was just playing accordion, you know, like in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Playing accordion and singing. And I was like, this sounds like something I'd never heard before. But then when, his first, you know, like major album where he did perfect reproductions of pop songs, I was like, I don't know, it's just too perfect. For me, it was too big of a leap from the just playing accordion to absolute perfect renditions of pop songs. I mean, I still love that album, but I didn't know any of the songs that he was parodying on Weird Al in 3D. Like it was all completely foreign to me. So it was just really slick recordings with goofy lyrics. But anyhow. You know, he gets when he does the polka things, it's like, more connected to that first album and more connected to his roots. So, you know, he's a great accordion player.
Yeah.
I feel like he's a lot goofier when his music feels a lot goofier when he does those polkas, as opposed to the slick pop recording, which doesn't sound like the kind of goofiness that like the music, his own music is. And I like that goofiness. Yeah. So I guess that's why I like the polkas. I like how goofy they are.
We were saying before, you really do miss, like, that first record has that, like, crazy, like, punk rock accordion energy to it. We kept saying that the whole time, like, how punk it is while still having all that accordion throughout. And once he moves on to, like, the better, like, more professionally produced recordings, the closest you get to that vibe on most of his records remains these polkas, where it's this like manic, frantic energy with accordion front and center the whole time. And it's just this like crazy display of like showmanship and just like, it's like, I love the embracing, which is just something he does a lot, but the like sort of enjoying the original material and embracing it while also like kind of mocking it and playfully fucking it up as he goes, you know, like that's, it's such a great little sweet spot he sits in on the polkas, really, again, from the jump forward.
Yeah, so in the fall of 1985, I invented a new genre of music, which is now known as Casio Punk.
Oh, shit, wow.
So I had this band called Jazzin, J-A-Z-Z-I-N, mm-hmm. apostrophe, hell, Jazzin Hell. You were just talking about that. The crazy punk energy of his accordion just reminded me of the crazy punk energy that we got out of the Casio.
Yeah, there's something so fun about getting that vibe out of an instrument that really has no business doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's what drew people to stuff like Wesley Willis, too. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely.
Like,
oh, my God.
The punk music scene embraced Wesley Willis or like even a Daniel Johnston mm-hmm. more than almost any other genre because it was just, I mean, punk is such a hard to describe genre anyway, but to its core, it's doing anything you can with the little bit that you have in front of you, right? Like, it's like, all right, I only know these three chords. I can write a whole album based on that. Like, when I first learned guitar, I remember I recorded a 10-song album in my friend's basement, all based around G, E minor, C, and D, because they were the only chords I could play.
Yeah,
so I
sweet.
Just played them at different speeds and was like, there's the album. Like,
turns out that's all you needed.
Yes.
You're all set. You're good to go. Yeah, man. Absolutely.
That's really how I based my whole comic book career was on just, you know, I'd put out comics and people would be like, well, this guy can't draw. And I'd be like, well, who cares?
Yeah.
Well, but there's truth to that, though. A good story is a good story, period.
Yeah. I'm getting the story told.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I could draw well enough that you could tell what was happening. Like, I kept everything, you know, clear. It's that whole idea of just taking what you got and doing all you can with it.
Totally.
Yeah. It's why the movie like Clerks will always be charming no matter
yep.
who watches it, because it's like you watch and it's like that is a group of friends just making a movie with what they had available to them. And like, as much as I like a lot of the later Kevin Smith movies, it does miss that scrappiness that you get in that very first movie
so
of just like, fuck it, this guy's going to play five different customers because he's the only person who's available to play these customers.
It's impossible to fake, right? It's like the hardest thing. Like you can get better, but you can't fake that like authenticity and instinct and being like having nothing and making the best you possibly can out of it. That's a very difficult thing to simulate when you actually do have money.
Let's start breaking down Hooked on Polkas.
Yeah. Let's look at Hooked on Polkas. So right now, just saying the song's going to kick off. This is one of the examples that we talked about last time we talked to polka, where this is an original traditional polka song called The 12th Street Rag kicks this off to get us into the polka mood before all of the modern songs start to bleed in. So we've got just an old school polka going on here at the start.
So I did not know that was a traditional polka.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you were like a real polka head, you'd probably recognize it right away.
I'm looking at a Frank Yankovic's Greatest Hits CD that I literally just bought at a Goodwill the other day. Yes.
Wow.
It's so amazing that the two most famous accordion players are both named Yankovic.
And I mean, not related. It's not related. It's beautiful.
It's
beautiful. It's poetic.
I want to point out, and this will come up later, I don't know what the official name of this is, but there are certain songs that I would refer to as like Oktoberfest polka. Like, it's like a song that makes you think of like an Oktoberfest celebration.
Yeah.
And to me, they usually have a bigger like oompa oompa drive on the tuba.
Mm-hmm.
This song definitely has that. And I think it's because there is a song in the middle of this that goes full blown like super German Oktoberfest polka.
Oh yes. Oh yes, it does.
I wonder if that was intentionally, but it bleeds into the State of Shock, the Jacksons, Mick Jagger, which Matt, you and I talked about a couple weeks ago on the Al TV special where they did the fake State of Shock music video.
It makes me so happy. You're taken to be good, just like you know you should.
Shock. That you put me in a state. Ooh, state of shock. It's just so musically goofy. It's so perfect. I just love it, love it, love it.
There's
so,
that's yeah.
That's the part of the song where now I'm all in.
Like, oh yeah.
That you're a traditional polka intro. Okay, I can sit through that. And then you just give me a little goofy ooh, boing.
And this is the weird one for me because so on the Al TV episode, they do this video and it is impressively hilarious. It is a 4.5 minute static shot of a man sitting at his desk singing State of Shock while doing all the instruments with his mouth. It's insane that they put it on television.
Yeah. This is a song I don't think I've ever heard the original.
I literally was just about to say, I wrote down, I don't know if I've ever heard the actual song State of Shock.
I love the fact that Al, like, something about this original track, for what it's worth, I'm not sure that I have either. And I almost don't want to now because I love the fact that like Al heard this song and something about it was so funny to him that he went back to it multiple times. I mean, a single song, him touching twice in any, like, that's pretty unusual. I love the fact that he goofed it on Al TV and then came back to add it to a polka. I mean, it's the Jacksons and Mick Jagger, so this is one of those things that's like on paper should have been a huge song but obviously was not.
So I just read this, which is even more insane. So the State of Shock is a 1984 single by the Jacksons featuring frontman Michael Jackson and Mick Jagger. It was written by Jackson and guitarist Randy Henson, whatever. The track was originally supposed to be sung with Freddie Mercury as a duet for the Thriller album. However, due to differing time schedules, Jackson just ended up doing it with his brothers and Mick Jagger instead. So, like, this was supposed to be on what is considered one of the greatest albums of all time.
Oh,
Freddie Mercury
God.
Wasn't available, and he's just like, we'll just do it as a Jackson song.
What's
Mick up to?
That's a really fun fact. Imagine the alternate timeline where this song was on Thriller.
With Freddie Mercury.
If it was, almost certainly we wouldn't have had it here. It probably would have been way too big to do in this offhand kind of throwaway way that Al does it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's go on to the next section.
Top coat, top hat. I don't worry because my wallet's fat. Black shades and white glove. Looking sharp, looking for love.
This is perfect. The banjo coming in just shredding in the background.
We were talking on This Is the Life about how Al brought in an old school session banjo player to play on that song because it was super intricate and complicated. This, no shade. This is Jim West playing the banjo like it's a drum, basically. Like it is like a piece of percussion. Like you can hear the note of it, but it's all about that like thwacky sound the whole time. It sounds so good with the accordion like stabs around it. I love hearing the banjo like that. It's so, so, so cool.
I feel like personally in every polka, there's at least one song where I'm like, I wouldn't hate hearing the entire song in that style.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This is that song for me in this one. I could listen to all, like, if he did a 2.5 minute just straight cover of Sharp Dressed Man in this style, I think it would be fantastic.
I'm inclined to agree. This feels like it works really well. There's another one coming up that I also think is exceptionally good.
I just want to mention that one of my favorite things about ZZ Top is a song about ZZ Top that I heard on Dr. Demento.
Ooh.
Which I don't really, I might sing it wrong. This is how I remember it going. I haven't heard it in decades, but it goes, I'm gonna grow a ZZ Top beard. I'm gonna grow a ZZ Top beard. I'm gonna grow a ZZ Top beard tonight.
I mean, if we're talking about ZZ Top, because I don't think we ever get to talk about ZZ Top again on this show, I do have to shout out that I love that their drummer who doesn't have a beard's last name is in fact Beard. And my first introduction to ZZ Top was not Back to the Future 3, like some people would assume it was, but a Sesame Street parody of ZZ Top that was a blues rock band of puppets that looked exactly like the band doing their song The ZZ Blues about falling asleep.
Wow. Okay, so just I'm just going to shout it out. We won't be able to listen to it right now. I looked it up. The group is called Barnes and Barnes, and the song is called ZZ Top Beard, and it is on YouTube. Actually, it looks like it's everywhere. I think it might be on Spotify and everything. Barnes and Barnes, like Barnes and Noble, but Barnes and Barnes.
Yeah, yeah, Barnes and Barnes.
I am so excited to listen to that.
Yeah, they're a great band.
That's great.
Yeah, let's move on to the next one.
I love the silly things that he does with his voice, like, what's love got to do
with it? With it. I know. Dude, such a little, because this is a pretty straight version of this song, but that, that the only bit of comedy we get in that is got to do. That's an excellent delivery of that line.
Yeah, it's great because it's very goofy, but it's also percussive.
Yeah.
And it's cool. Yeah. That he's, you know, he's singing the lyrics, but he's also using his voice as a percussive instrument.
Yeah.
There's real artistry. It's not just being a goofball.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. I want to call attention to a piece that's easy to skip because there's not singing there, but, you know, he does the sharp dress, man, hey! And then it's just like 20, maybe 15, 20 seconds of just chaos. Like the accordion's going crazy. There's like rubber duck quacks in the background. Yeah, yeah. Like there's just all these noise, just like a wall of sounds for a couple seconds before the Tina Turner portion comes in. Absolutely. I love those little moments in the polka too, where they just have fun.
So many of those little moments are him like finding a way to change key. You know, to move into the right register for the next song. It's like these little like runs and fills and stuff to modulate the song to where he needs to go. I don't know all the legality that goes into licensing these because it seems like it would be an absolute nightmare trying to get the permissions. And again, as we go along, there are examples of how he had something in a polka that they had to cut because at the last minute they could not work out a deal for the rights for that
bit
of a song.
He works out deals for the other songs, although
he doesn't technically have to.
He doesn't have to because parody is protected by the fair use clause of copyright law.
Yeah.
But I know he always asks for permission.
He's always chosen to because he didn't want to.
But does he also pay?
Yeah. Yeah. So usually when he does the parody, a part of the asking for permission thing as well is I think he could get away with parodying almost anything if he was willing to give 100% of the songwriting credit to the original artist. And then it's just like a cover. But if he gets permission, then they negotiate a deal where I'm guessing he gets, I mean,
like 50,
he,
50
maybe half.
Like
yeah. Where it's like your original melody and you know, chords, but his lyric on top of it. But for this, it's even more complicated because this isn't even just a straight, like he has to figure out how to split this evenly, maybe evenly between the Jacksons
like 10,
and ZZ
artists.
Top and Tina Turner. I mean, it's like a nightmare trying to negotiate. Like if ZZ Top is like, well, we think we deserve more than Tina Turner.
No,
it's all over.
Yeah. So I do want to suggest on this next part that we're about to look into, let's just do both the Methods of Modern Love and Owner of a Lonely Heart. Cause I'm pretty sure the Methods of Modern Love is exactly 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
M-E-T-H-O-D-O-F-L-O-V-E. It's the Method of Modern Love.
The ability to literally, in the middle of this polka, make fun of that weird breakdown in the actual Owner of a Lonely Heart song.
Very
makes
impressive.
Makes me so happy.
And the little flourishes that he does between each...
Oh, yeah. Yeah!
Well, no, I mean the musical flourishes
between
each section of the lyrics, right? that's a little original composition.
Every time.
That he doesn't get credit for.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
No, I do love the very quickness of the... I don't know if I've ever actually heard the original version of Methods of Modern Love, but I have on many occasions just been walking around my house being like, M-O-D-E-R-E-N-E.
So this is another great example of... Because I can't remember right now. Is this the only time Al ever does anything by Hall & Oates?
I think it is.
In which case, this is another example of like, in the history of Hall & Oates... To only do this song, like, whoa.
Yeah, it's a
a
weird
band with 1,000 huge hits, and this is a song that I think very few people would remember.
I don't remember it.
I feel like the most memorable thing about the song Methods of Modern Love is that Method Man used it for the song Method Man. You know what I mean?
That's like, right. You've had a great sample of someone spelling his name. He was like, yeah, we know that.
They zoom past that Hall & Oates song right into The Owner of a Lonely Heart. Yes, I mean, probably one of the only times that he's been able to work a prog band into his polka, but it's a quick one, but it is fun. And then yes, the Owner of a Lonely Heart in the original song has that same weird drum breakdown that he does. And I mean, we're about to dive into the next one, but it so beautifully leads right, like it just like seamlessly bleeds them
into
the next part.
It's a great moment. And again,
song.
Yeah, he did, because he does not get to do too much prog rock parody in his career. So he did take the opportunity to do this crazy, like weird, odd time signature, like section of music.
Was that Rush?
It's Yes.
No, that was Yes.
Oh, Yes. See, I always get those two mixed up because they're both like one syllable things that have a sound in them.
Totally. And probably the only two prog rock groups to actually have multiple charting
have
hits
like legit
on like mainstream
songs as a prog band. Yeah,
well,
it's true.
I had a band in high school called Divot Head, and we were kind of a punk band because I was really into punk. I was into like Dead Kennedys and Butthole Surfers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But my friends were into Rush and Yes. So it was like if you mix Dead Kennedys, Butthole Surfers, Rush, and Yes together. And, you know, played by fairly amateur musicians. That's what my high school band was like.
Yeah.
That sounds like way better than what my high school band was like, which was like, can we just cover Green Day? Those songs are easy, right? Let's just do that. All right. So let's move into Al doing. And no, we can do both of these, too, because I don't think he does too much with We're Not Gonna Take It.
We're not gonna take it. No, we ain't gonna take it.
Nonsense roof balloons, a moon wreck from Hobbizon, a moon sack roof as fast as I. I'm homesick to I'm getting a bite.
Okay, these both the originals of these songs are big deals for me because they were big hit songs when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And the first one, first off, it's just amazing that he does this like cool lounge, laid back lounge version of, you know, like
a metal anthem.
Yeah.
But so that song is really special to me because one time I was like getting bullied by this guy that was like four times my size and he was not letting me get on my bus. He wanted to fight me. And so I just punched him right in the face and I got on the bus. And then, so then the next, and I was like, wow, how did that happen? And then the next day at school, he was waiting for me when I got off the bus and punched me in the face. Like, and his punch was a good deal more powerful than the punch that I gave him.
Oh, Jesus.
So that, then he was like, then he was gonna not just punch me, he was gonna, you know, really beat me.
Yeah.
But I refused to fight. And instead, I verbally dressed him down until, like, the principal came out and broke it up or whatever. And then the entire rest of the day, everywhere I walked in the high school, so I was a senior then, all the freshman boys were singing that song to me everywhere I went.
Oh, I love that. So wait, you managed to actually talk him out of... beating you up, or like you just like shit talked him until it ended. That's awesome.
Yeah. It was fantastic. Amazing. Yeah, it really worked.
Wow, respect for that. You beat him with your mind.
Yeah.
Before we bleed into the Twisted Sister, into 99 Luftballons, I do want to also shout out the awesome background vocals of just the "no" in the middle of that. It's like,
yeah,
it's so good. Then he gets into, I hinted at this earlier, but what I would consider a very Oktoberfest type polka song with his take on 99 Luftballons. That's basically just tuba and him for a big chunk of it.
So 99 Luftballons is pretty amazing thing in American pop music in that it's a song that was a hit and wasn't in English.
Super rare. Those are super rare.
Yeah, very rare.
And I love the fact they wound up doing an English version anyway, but it didn't change the fact that this still worked in German. Like, it still was a big hit song, even in its original language, which is just incredible.
Well, they tried to cover their bases by when they put out the single.
Yeah.
It was English on the A side and German, the original German, on the B side.
Yeah.
And everyone just ignored the English side.
Yeah, yeah, no one cared. Everyone was totally down with the German version. I love that, yeah.
My favorite part of listening to the German one is obviously the fact that Captain Kirk is the same in English as it is in German. So it's just like all of this German, and then just out of nowhere, like, Captain Kirk, like back into German.
Yeah.
Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice.
All right, let's tackle these next two as well, because I feel like they barely do anything with this Duran Duran song.
Now I gotta cut loose, foot loose, kick off the Sunday shoes. Please, Louise, pull me off of my knees. Jack, get back. Come on before we crack. Loose, your blues. Everybody got foot loose. So why don't you use it? Try not to bruise it. By time, don't lose it.
Okay, so then in the let me try. By time, don't lose it.
I say, doing a full-on SpongeBob impression there.
He's parodying their singing style, so it's still parody.
Oh, right? Yeah. Oh, totally.
And this is another one. I do like Duran Duran. I don't know if I really know the song The Reflex. Like, when I think of Duran Duran, I think of Rio or Hungry Like the Wolf.
Another group where I think this is the only Duran Duran we get from Al, and... like Hall & Oates, in retrospect, he picked an odd choice. What now feels like this was a hit for them, but feels like a deep cut now. Like, this is just not stood the test of time like Rio or Hungry Like the Wolf or any of those songs.
Well, and you were talking about, James, you were talking about the lounge style that he kind of applied to Twisted Sister. This is like tenfold on the Footloose. This is just like a smoky... like a cafe.
He loves to do the jazz lounge thing, and it's pretty rare that on a single polka he kind of does it twice. He does a version of it for Twisted Sister, which is a little bit more like swung out, but then the Footloose thing is just straight like a jazz trio version, the walking bass line the whole time for the first half.
Yeah, and then was it banjo that comes
that
in?
That banjo comes back.
The banjo comes back.
And then it gets it's almost like this, like, it almost sounds like banjo techno.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a driving beat there.
It's great.
And it reminds me of a bunch of tracks by the band Ween.
Oh, yeah.
They kind of do that thing where they combine, like, this driving techno beat sometimes with like, crazy country music.
Yeah, totally. I would have never thought that, but you're right. That's very... there's a lot of Ween element in that, which I love. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get the last bit of this done. Let's see. There's 49 seconds. Let's just finish it out.
Yeah, let's finish it out.
Okay, let's go.
Bang your head.
have a question for the two musicians on this call, because I'm not positive I'm correct on this.
Okay.
But am I hearing what is the sound of a hammer hitting an anvil on that bang your
head? I think
head?
That's what, if that's not what it exactly is, that's what it's supposed to sound like on the...
Because I'm thinking of the Maxwell Silver Hammer.
Yes.
Type
yeah, no, it
of
sounds
it.
Just like Maxwell Silver Hammer,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for Metal Health. I was going to say, this is the other one where I would love to hear a full version of Al and his band doing Bang Your Head by Quiet Riot, because that sounds awesome to me.
Yeah,
I
it
love
does.
The way that they do that with the anvil hits.
This was, just listening to it now is the first time I really appreciate it, specifically in the transition from Quiet Riot into Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Yeah.
John Bermuda Schwartz's drumming
so
in
good.
This is unbelievable. There's like a cowbell, like a very quick cowbell
yeah.
fill, and then like the drum fills that are happening underneath are just out of this world
yeah.
in this.
I mean, we've said it before and we're going to say it again. The musicianship that it takes to do this the way that they do is really, really intense. Like, this is not easy to stitch these things together. We talked before about the Ear Booker polka, all these little interstitial things he does. Some of them are so fast to get him to the next song. It is an incredible accomplishment for him and the band to make this seem as, to make this so seamless the way
yes,
it comes
no,
across.
It really is. It's incredible. The musicianship is just, you know, absolute world-class, top level.
Absolutely,
sure.
Yeah.
100%.
And, I mean, I have to say, we have to acknowledge that it is pretty in Al's... You know, it's funny, going into this podcast, I was like, Al has this reputation for being very squeaky clean and just so family-friendly and G-rated. Al ending this polka with repeating
the
When You Want to Come so many times.
It's actually embarrassing.
It is. It makes me feel really uncomfortable. And
yeah,
absolutely. I can't get over that he leaned into it so hard. And again, it's fine. The Frankie Goes to Hollywood song repeats that line. It's totally radio safe and friendly. But him leaning into it the way that he does is just like... both uncomfortable and hilarious.
Well, there's something about the Frankie Goes to Hollywood one that makes you kind of feel like, well, maybe they mean something else.
Exactly.
Maybe they mean come over. Wait, if you want to come
yeah.
over.
The way Al delivers it is like, there's no other way to take this.
No, he's talking about come.
Without a doubt, there's no getting around it.
We have to give credit that I think Al has every single one of these polkas. You know, we've only talked about two so far, but just knowing the rest of his career,
yeah,
he is so good at knowing what is the song to close it out on.
Yes, like excellent way to end it. Excellent
it's
way to
always
end
the
it.
Home run. None of the other songs would have worked. It
no.
is the exact right song.
So true.
To bring the whole thing to a conclusion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just a great pick. Thank you so much for coming on and joining us, James. You get to join us for the fun ranking portion of it. Now, Matt, I feel like this is a pretty easy one for me because we only have one other polka to compare it to. Where do you rank this on the Al polkas thus far?
Compared to polkas on 45, I'm putting this above polkas on 45.
I'm doing the exact same. So our
yeah,
our
I like this one a lot.
Matches.
This is really, really good. This is this actually might be my favorite for a little while, because this is
I agree.
I love the way this one's done. I love the song choices, even the weird song choices, like we were talking about Method of Modern Love and The Reflex, which people might not know the originals of anymore. Honestly, even Bang Your Head, I feel like, is not as like it. Bang Your Head has not had the legacy that We're Not Gonna Take It now has.
No
everyone knows we're not gonna take it, but Bang Your Head
was a huge song in its day, but people don't remember it.
But
as well.
Even the less notable, and State of Shock. We said, I don't think anyone in the world has heard State of Shock aside from a Weird Al version. But they all still come across great. It's really well put together. This is my number one polka as of now.
Sweet.
I agree for all those reasons. And then, I mean, I think slightly harder, but still a little easy. Where are we ranking this with his albums thus far, as this is the closing track of the album? You know, there was a couple stumbles on his parodies, but for me, I'm popping this to the top right now.
You are?
Yeah, above In 3D and the self-titled. I'm keeping it at one for now, but it is a close one. This and In 3D are both really, really great to me. But Matt, where are you ranking this?
I have to say, and I would have never thought I was going to do this, but I think I'm going to put In 3D at number one and this at number two. I think Dare to Be Stupid has higher highs and lower lows and is more, I think it's less consistent than in 3D. I feel like now I'm looking at the track list. I feel like, because this is also, I mean, we talked about all of this throughout the record. Like, this has the Girls Just Want to Have Lunch that the label forced him to do. It has the George of the Jungle thing, which it seems like the label might have forced him to do. I think there was a lot, and it has I Want a New Duck, which I don't like at all. And
he may have been forced to do that Johnny Dangerously too. Did it for the money. I did it for the money song. I don't know.
Dare to Be Stupid is top tier Al. Yoda is top tier Al. Like a Surgeon is top tier Al. But I feel like as an overall album, I think I might like the way In 3D plays a little bit more. So I'm going to put at my number one.
All right. So we're different on there. Yeah. All right. Now, James, you get to do some ranking too, though, because we have a running list. Every time we have a guest pick a song, we've been ranking them. So I will tell you what the list looks like at this time, and you can tell me where Hooked on Polkas go. But we got One More Minute is our current number one. Yoda's at number two. Like a Surgeon is at three. Girls Just Want to Have Lunch is somehow at number four. Nature Trail to Hell is at five. Eat It at six. Slime Creatures from Outer Space at seven. I Lost on Jeopardy at eight. King of Suede at nine, and at number 10, the never released It's Still Billy Joel to Me live cover that he did. Where do you want to put Hooked on Polkas amongst those 10 songs?
I don't know. I can't even begin.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, the next guest we have could just completely undo whatever you decide anyway, so don't worry about that.
Okay, let's put it in there, number five.
Number five? All right. There it is.
I love that.
I would put Dare to Be Stupid number one.
Well, we didn't have a guest on Dare to Be Stupid. That's the only reason why. We were selfishly like, no, we want to talk about this one.
Exactly.
And you can also, the other thing you can do if you'd like, if you think that there is anything on that list that is dramatically in the wrong spot, you could move it up or down to a better position.
It's too hard. These kind of things are too hard for you. People ask me, like, what are your top 10 favorite albums? I'm like, I don't know. No, it's just too hard for me.
All right. Totally fair. Well, we've got Hooked on Polkas at number five. I always appreciate a guest who doesn't put their song just right at the top of the list.
And you're the first guest we've had for a polka, which I love. Yeah. So thank you very much for talking about a polka with us. There's a lot to talk about, but we got into it. I love that.
Yeah, it was fun.
Before we wrap up, where can people go to check out the music you're working in, the most recent song that you've got out?
Spotify is a great spot. I also have a Bandcamp page, although I haven't put my most recent song on Bandcamp. My most recent song is called The Mummy's on the Loose. It's a collaboration between me and this local punk band called Rough Francis. I don't even know how to begin. It's such a crazy journey, this song, because I actually wrote the song in 1985. When I was a freshman in college, it's like one of the first things I did in college was I met this friend, Eric Bradford. We sat on a couch together and we wrote this song, The Mummy's on the Loose. But we never really recorded it. We did play it live on the radio one time, on the college radio station. But then fast forward 30 years and now I've recorded the song. I have my own band, James Kochalka Superstar, but I did not record this song with my band. I recorded it with this band called Rough Francis. Rough Francis is a punk band from Vermont. The most famous thing about Rough Francis is that they had a song on the Tony Hawk soundtrack. The other really cool thing about Rough Francis, other than that they're just fantastic, great guys, is their dads were in the proto-punk band Death. You might know from the big documentary, A Band Called Death.
I do know that, yeah.
That's an awesome legacy. And then we got guest backup vocals by Jello Biafra of the Dead Kennedys.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
my God, that's insane.
It is absolutely insane.
Wow,
so
congrats.
It's a song that I wrote in 1985 with guest vocals from my favorite singer from 1985.
That's incredible.
That's so cool.
And my backup band is the Sons of
Death.
Basically the first punk band ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
It is just, and it's an incredible, incredible song. And we had, so we recorded it at Ruff Francis's own recording studio here in Burlington, Vermont. A little like, it's kind of like a warehousey kind of artist loft called The Box, where we recorded it. But we had it mixed, and really what he did was far beyond mixing, mixed by Peter Kadis, who's a Grammy-winning record producer, who worked on The National and Interpol and
nice, wow,
a bunch of big bands like that. So it's a great song. We made a music video too. You can find on YouTube. Anyhow, it's pretty easy to search for "The Mummy's on the Loose." If you search for that online, you should find it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, James, for joining us. Weird Al fans, we will not be diving right into Polka Party because there are two stops along the way that include another Al TV and the home video release of The Complete Al, the VHS tape that he released to promote the Dare to Be Stupid album. So we're going to be covering both of those in the coming weeks before we get into Polka Party. But James, thank you so much for joining us for Hooked on Polkas. Go check out James's new song, and we'll be back next week with more Weird Algorithm.
Thank you, James.
All right. Thank you.
Thank
you. Great, great fun.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.